right?
The justification for removing it afterwards, saying it's going to tear something, it's going to become smaller, so if you made it smaller, it's not
eating. That's right, but you didn't do it specifically to make a gershrei. Eino sin gershrei lachatkila means that you don't deliberately create a garbage pile in order to be allowed to move it. But in the case where you're sitting down to a meal, you're just eating normally, then there's accumulation of dirty plates, and the Gemara says that you're allowed to move it. Okay. All right. Let's stick now back to our page 6 in this handout. Okay, let's read a little bit further down. You're not allowed to put the pot on a log, right? You can't use a log on even on Yom Tov to support a pot. Okay? You can't move a log over. Suppose you have a log, you can't.
Burning log.
Yeah, a log for a firewood. You have some logs.
And a table you can.
You're allowed to move a table. The Mishnah is saying that you can't move a log to use it as a support for something or other, for your pot, say. Okay? Vaha bikat bakat dviyom tov davashem lachto lehetehu. After all, you're allowed to use a log on Yom Tov. I mean, you're allowed to run the fire, right? If you have your fire going, you're allowed to take your log of firewood.
Move it. No, you can't.
You are allowed to use it to repeat. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, you're not allowed to carry a log in order to support something with it, right? You can't take a piece of wood off your fire. You have a pile of firewood. Okay, you have a hot pot, you want to take it off the fire and put it down on something, you're not allowed to take your piece of firewood on Yom Tov and move it over to support your pot. For a trivet, for example. Okay, so but now the Gemara is asking, if you have this principle that something that is melachto leheter, you're allowed to carry for any purpose, why shouldn't you be allowed to carry this log if it's Yom Tov? On Shabbat we understand, the log can't be used on Yom Tov, so it's Melachto Le'isu on Shabbat, so it's Melachto Le'isu. But if it's Yom Tov, why shouldn't you be allowed to use it? Okay. Alma Davasha Melachto Le'eteo Bein Letzorach Gufo Bein Letzorach Koso Asur. Right. So the Gemara says Hatam My Timer Kevan De B'Shabbat Davasha Melachto Le'isu Hu Gzeira Yom Tov Atu Shabbat V'Chitema Shabbat Gufei Tishteri. Why shouldn't it even be allowed to be used on Shabbat itself? You're allowed, for example, to move the sewing machine over if you need it to support the pot, right? That's the principle, that klishim lachto li'isul. You would be allowed to move the television over to support a pot. Klishim lachto li'isul. The tzorech gufo is mutar. So why shouldn't you be allowed to use this log? So here the Gemara makes a very important distinction. Hani meili hecha de ikatarat kaliyala. The principle that you're allowed to carry a kli shem lachto li'isu l'tzorach gufo or shem lachto leheter presumes that the object itself is a utensil. Aval hecha de lekatarat kaliyala lo. And since this log is not a utensil, then even though it might be on Yom Tov Melachto Heter or on Shabbat Melachto Lehisur, but it's Lotzorach Gufo, you're not allowed to carry it. So we see clearly that this principle of Klisha Melachto Lehisur, Lotzorach Mekomo, is Mutar, involves the notion of what constitutes a kli. If it is not a kli, then you are not allowed to carry it for any purpose at all, unless, of course, it's something that is usable on the for its own purpose. So you would not be allowed on Yom Tov to carry this log around, even though you would be allowed to use the log to carry it to burn. But to use it for some other purpose, at least on Shabbat, you would be not allowed to use it because it has the status of mukta. Okay. I forgot to Xerox the preceding page, so just listen. It's on Daf Kuf Kaf Gimel on Shabbat. I have one copy here, but I don't have enough to pass. I don't have more to pass out, which draws this distinction even more cleanly. The Gemara asks. The Mishnah says, "Machat shel yad li tol ba et hakotz," as an illustration of what is a kli shemlachto li isur that you're allowed to carry with tzorach gufo. It lists a needle, an ordinary sewing needle, you're allowed to carry on Shabbat in order to remove a splinter. Okay, you have a splinter. You want to dig out the splinter. It's causing you pain. You're allowed to carry a needle, even though a needle is a kli shemlachto le'isur, but the halacha is kli shemlachto le'isur l'tzal kufo is mutar. So you would be allowed to go into the sewing box and open it up and take out a needle in order to remove the splinter. So Gemara asks, Shalach le'rova brei d'rava l'rav Yosef, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Machat shel yad li tol bo et hakotz, machat shini tal charara ulutza mahu. Suppose this needle has the eye broken off. Well, you have a perfectly good needle, and then the needle gets damaged. The eye is broken off. No. Well, the problem is it a kli?
No more purpose.
You see, that's the question. The question is whether this needle, which is no longer fit to serve as a needle, has it lost its status of kli? If it is not a kli, then you would not be allowed to carry it. But that's the whole point. The point of letzorach gufo or letzorach makomo only applies to kelim. Objects which do not have the status of kli do not have the seter. Therefore, that's the question that the Gemara raises. Machat. Okay. So the Gemara asks Mr. Fried's question. If the reason that you're allowed to carry it is to remove the splinter, as far as the splinter is concerned, the splinter doesn't care whether the needle has an eye or not. After all, the eye is important to thread the needle with, but for removal of the splinter, whether this particular needle has an eye or not, what difference does it make? So the Gemara says, Eitve, machat shinital charara o uktsa tahora. Mishnah in Masechet Kelim says that a needle that has lost its eye no longer is capable of acquiring tumah. In other words, as far as the laws of tumah are concerned, this needle is not considered a kli. Amar Abayi, tumah ashabat karami. You're asking a kashya to the laws of Shabbat from the laws of tumah. Tumah kli ma'aseh b'inan. The definition of a kli for Shabbat. For the laws of tumah. Excuse me. The definition of a tumah, the law of a kli, of what a utensil is for the laws of tumah requires that it actually be a fit utensil that has to serve its original purpose. Inyan Shabbat, midi dechazi be'inan. The definition of a kli is something which can be used. The strict requirements of the laws of kelim, which apply for hilchot tumah, don't necessarily apply as far as the laws of Shabbat. I want to pause for a moment with this discussion because I think that this is again illustrative of something which lies much deeper than all of this. The Gemara is telling us that as far as these laws of Tiltul Kelim are concerned, the object has to have the status of a kli. Then the Gemara has a hypothesis that the definition of a kli is the same as the definition of a kli as far as Tiltul Tuma are concerned. And then the Gemara rejects this. Okay? My feeling here is that this is not just an accidental question and answer. And I think that we have to try to look at this problem from the exact opposite point of view. Remember that prior to the sequence of heterim, the concept of whether something was a kli or not was not to allow you to carry it, but to prevent you from carrying it. Remember, you had this main
reversal
of role here. originally, the fact that something was a kli meant that you weren't allowed to carry it on Shabbat. That was the, whether it was an original halacha, whether it was the gzeirah of Nechemya, the Mishnah Rishona said that the only utensil that you were allowed to carry kli on Shabbat was tableware. Other than tableware, you were not allowed to carry any utensil on Shabbat. Therefore, the fact that this was a utensil made it prohibited. Then there was a sequence of heterim, and we reached the opposite conclusion, the opposite stage, where the fact that something was a utensil made it permissible, rather than...
If you had need for it.
If you had need for it, but made it permissible. And according, if it was a klishim lachtam leheter, you didn't even have to have need for it. It just... There was some reason for moving it. It could even be to protect the kli. And if it was a kli shem lachto, the isul, then you were only allowed to move it if you needed it or you needed the place, but not to protect the utensil. But in any event, the notion that you were allowed to carry it was derived from the fact that it was a kli. In previous times, the notion that you were not allowed to carry it derived from the fact that it was a kli. If we accept my hypothesis that the laws of muktzah were really quite independent and ancient, then, and there were prohibitions against moving or touching, or let's hesitate on the word touching for example, but certainly carrying or moving things around on Shabbat, so to speak, with a sort of independent existence, then, and we view this in the sense that objects became, so to speak, taboo. And if we think of it, that's the way the man in the street today regards the laws of muktzah on Shabbat. You're not allowed to touch the television show on Shabbat. I mean, whether that is true or not true, that's the way in which the average family regards the laws of Shabbat. Don't touch it, the mother says, because it's muktzah. It's the same business, as we said, with Chava, extending the prohibition against the eating of, from the Eitz Hadaat. Don't touch. Now, when we come to the notion of touch, of course, then there was a whole class of laws relating to objects that you could touch or you couldn't touch, and those were the laws of Tumah Vatar. Today, these laws of Tumah are things that are foreign to our experience. Muktzah is close to our experience, and Tumah Vatar is something that we don't give a second thought to. But in the time of Bayit Sheni, and certainly towards the end of Bayit Sheni, Tumah Vatara was one of the main facts of life for all Jews. I mean, even murderers, the Gemara in Chulin tell us, were concerned about the laws of Tumah Vatara, or that a man and a woman, and a man and a married woman, refrained from committing adultery because they couldn't find a mikvah nearby to utilize. In other words, the laws of Tumah Vatara were part of the daily awareness. This was just like, for us, the laws of brachos, which are quite complicated, are part of our everyday life, and the laws of muktzah on Shabbos are something which really impinges on our consciousness. In everyday life, at the time of the end of Bayit Sheni, the laws of Tumah Vatara were part of the everyday life. And therefore, I'm willing to formulate as a conjecture, as a hypothesis, I don't have strict proof for this, that the laws of muktzah and the laws of tumah were in fact bound up with one another. That is, the fact that the Gemara here raises the issue of an analogy between tumah and muktzah is not accidental, but in fact, originally, the prohibition laws of muktzah, what you were not allowed to touch, were similar to the things that were capable of acquiring tumah. And that if the laws were that a kli was something that you weren't allowed to touch, the definition of a kli was something which could be makabel tumah. And then with the gradual reversal, the heter of something that you could carry or on Shabbat became something that was defined by tumah. But there was an intimate relationship all along between the concept of tumah and the concept of muktzah. Yes?
Isn't it possible that they quoted tumah for a more simple-minded reasoning, that that's an aspect of halakha, where the fact that it's a usable kli...
Yeah, sure, that's the simplest and truest interpretation of the Gemara.
Are there other aspects of halakha where being a kli, a functional kli, is crucial to the application?
There are other aspects. For example, in order to... In the Beit HaMikdash, for the Shkitat Kodshim, the Gemara derives that it has to be a kli. The Shkitat Chulin, you don't need a kli. for the Shchitat Kadshim, you do need a Kli. And the Gemara also raises, as you say, some questions as to what the definition of a Kli there is, and whether you need a Kli Sharet, or any Kli will do, and what have you. So there are other aspects, other places in the Halacha, where the notion of whether something is a Kli. A Kli, for example, also has an intrinsic importance as far as the name Amanot is concerned. In other words, for example, if for Kiddushin, although you normally, or Khalifin, you normally, for Kiddushin, you need something like a Shaveh Puta, there is certainly an opinion that a Kli would be sufficient, and certainly as far as Khalifin are concerned, a Kli is sufficient. So therefore, the fact that it has the status of a Kli removes the normal requirement that it have a market value. Like something which is not even a Shaveh Puta, nevertheless, if it has the status of a Kli, has a certain status in Hukas Mekach Umemka. So there are two additional examples of where the laws of whether something is a Kli or not has...
And what could be there if it breaks?
Then it would not... If it loses its status of a Kli, then it won't be a Kli. In other words, but again, whether a Machat that lost a needle that lost its eye, at the moment I can't think of that particular question being raised there. So all of these argue for your position and against what I'm trying to say.
But the fact that there were others and they chose this one obviously your position.
Well, whatever. What I'm trying to say is that despite my being able to make a convincing case of this, what I'm saying is that it's most likely that because the laws of Tumah were so much the part of everybody's consciousness, and since the laws of Muktzah, in the popular mind at least, to this very day, have to do with touching, even though the precise halachic formulation is carrying, nevertheless, this has something to do with the laws of Tumah. There's only one place that I'm aware of where the language, at least, indicates that Muktzah has something to do with carrying. And this is it's certainly not of the actual accepted halacha, but we find in the Yerushalmi of Masechet Beitza. And the Yisur of Achila. But the one place where we find that this has to do with touching, do you have Yerushalmi?
Yeah.
Okay. There are two places at the beginning of Perek He. In Beitza. Masechet Beitza, the very beginning of Perek He. The Gemara says, Beitza shenoldoviyom tov, samchim la kvilish b'shvil shalotit galgel. If a egg was laid and you're afraid that it's going to roll down the hill, the hen has laid the egg on top of some incline and you're afraid that the egg will roll away and break, you're allowed to it doesn't say cover it, it says samchim la kli, you're allowed to put a utensil next to it, below it, to prevent it from...
It will break it anyways.
No, he just says, you're worried about it's rolling down the hill.
It will break it anyways.
No. You're allowed to... It says... Samchin lakli v'shvil shalotit galgel, aval ein kofin lakli. But you're not allowed to cover it. Okay? Ushmuel amal, Shmuel says, kofin lehakli. Amal Rabbi Mana, Ravana says, "Uvilvad shelo yehikli nogeya b'gufa shel beitza," provided that you don't touch the egg with the utensil. In other words, you can take
it. To be large enough.
You have to. You're allowed to cover this egg with a pot, but you're not allowed to cover it with a teacup. If in the course of covering it, you're actually going to touch the beitza.
What's the problem?
The problem is, what's wrong with touching? If the law of Muktzah is not carrying, then what's the problem of touching? Of course, this is not convincing evidence, because after all, we're talking about an egg, and therefore, if you touch it, it may roll. So that therefore, it may not be possible to touch it without moving it. So that therefore, although the Gemara says, don't touch it, it does, all right? The second place is just a little bit further on the bottom line. Mitzadata, there were some nets. Havyan Turisin, there were some nets, some fishing nets, which were spread out in the sun. V'havi mishtalchonu shimsha. They were going to be destroyed by being out in the sun. The sun was just going to burn them, essentially. Aton shalun l'rav, mahu metaltalutan. Are we allowed to carry them in, get them out of the sun? This is a classical case of a klisha melachtol le'isul mechamor latzer. So therefore, you would, the answer should be,
yes.
No, you're not allowed to carry them. It's a klisha melachtol le'isul, and it's mechamor latzer. You're not allowed to remove a kli, even with a hefsed merubah. There's no heter of a klisha melachtol le'isul mechamor latzer. If you left your TV set outside, or your fancy Walkman outside, your TV Walkman, $200 portable CD player outside on the back porch over Friday afternoon, and then you remembered after Shabbos that they're out there. You can't move them in, even though you really know that somebody's going to rip you off. That's the law. Mechamalat sale is prohibited. Okay, so what should the answer be? The answer should be no. You're not allowed to bring them in. Amarlon asur ligabon, don't touch them. Okay, and of course this is also not very much in the way of evidence because this is just maybe a means of expression. It may not mean that you're not allowed to touch the nets. It just may mean no, you're not allowed to carry them. But he's expressing himself a little strongly in this event. In the Where does the Rambam bring this halacha? Let's take a look in the Rambam. Perek Hafei Milcha Shabbat Halacha Chaf Gimel. The Rambam writes, אסור לבטל כלי מהיכנון מפני שהוא כסותר, כיצד לא ייתן כלי תחת הנר בשבת לקבל את השם הנוטף, שהשם שבנר אסור לפרוח, לא כשיפול לכלי יעשה תלתו לכלי שמותר, וכן כי יוצא בו. לפיכך, אין נותנים כלי תחת התנגולת לקבל ביצתה, אבל כופה הוא הכלי עליה, you're allowed to cover the chicken's egg with the utensil, וכן כופה הכלי על כל דבר שאסור לטלטלו, since the utensil is not a support for this davar asur, you would be allowed to remove it whenever you want, and therefore this is not bitul kli mehichana. The Raivad adds, aval kofehu hakli, katava Raivad, b'Yerushalmi ulvavad shelo yiga beveitza, provided that you don't touch the egg. The Magid Mishnah says, "Uvahagot amah Avram v'Yerushalmi v'vad shelo yiga beveitza." He writes, "V'lo yadati tam." Why shouldn't you do that? V'chi amutza v'hanolad asur yiga behem. Are you not allowed to touch mutza? Kol she'eino menanea, havadai lo. Certainly not. There's no law which says that you can't touch mukta if you're not really moving it. The efshar shema yena'anea habeitza agidei hakli. Maybe because it's an egg and there's no real way of touching it without moving it, then you will be doing that. Let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch. Beitzah, first of all, in Simon Shin Chaf Beis, the din nolad b'Shabbat, or Beitzah shenolad b'Shabbat, asur afilu l'taltala, v'afilu n'tarva be'elef kulan asurot, v'yachol l'chof aleh ha'kli shelo tishaver, uvilvad shelo yigaba. Okay, so that's just simply the straight rival with no explanation. Then, elsewhere, but that doesn't pose any problems for us because we can still interpret the Shulchan Aruch the way the Magid Mishnah interprets the Shulchan Aruch. Then we have, I wrote down to make sure I have the right reference here. Let's take a look in Shin Yud Sivav. Let's see what the Rish Lakish says there. This is a little bit more problematical. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Kol davar shasur l'taltelo, asur l'tal tachtav kli kedei sheyipol l'tocho, mepnei she'oser hakli b'tiltul, nimtzam avatel kli mehechano." That's the Rambam that we just read. "Aval mutal l'chafot alav kli," you can cover the object with a utensil, "uvilvad shelo yigabo." This is much more problematical because he's not restricting himself to a beitza. He's saying in general, okay? So that's in Simon Shin Yud, a Sif Vav. On the other hand, in Simon Shin Chet, Sif Mem Beis, let's take a look there. "Davar shehu muktza, mutar li gabo, uvelvad shelo yehei menanea afilo miktzato," provided that you don't move it at all. So there's some contradiction here between the Shulchan Aruch, lots of people discuss how to resolve this contradiction, but let's just leave it as a contradiction. The general accepted halachic view is that the law of muktza refers to moving something and does not refer to touching something. The general accepted household view of muktza is don't touch. And all that I'm pointing out is that there is some slight echo of that don't touch aspect of the halacha, even though we can interpret them all away in these three or four citations that I've brought. The two places in the Yerushalmi, neither of which is convincing. The Rambam and the Beitzak case of the Shulchan Aruch, which is derivative from the Yerushalmi, and what's slightly strange is this one generalized version of the case of Beitza, which the Shulchan Aruch brings, to which our explanation that Beitza is round and will roll down the hill doesn't necessarily apply. Okay, I think that gives us enough of, I don't have enough time, I wanted to go through all of the Rambam and the Chol Beitza, but maybe we'll do that quickly at the beginning of the next Shiur. No, what do you say now? Nothing ever happens. Is that good or bad? Okay, so we'll stop here and make it then continue on.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3.